The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The true crime series, The Case I Can't Forget, returns for a new season tomorrow on RTE1 at 9:35, featuring a deep dive into some of Ireland's most infamous criminal investigations. This season includes a two-part special on the notorious Dublin gangster Martin Cahill, who was known as The General, offering a look at his rise to power and the complex crimes that made him one of Ireland's most feared figures. Joining me on the line now is Dr. Pat Leahy, former Garda Assistant Commissioner for Dublin, who features in the series. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, I remember Martin Cahill, and you remember Martin Cahill. We've been around a while. But for people who never heard of The General, who was he?
Well, most people will probably remember Martin Cahill from the movies that were made about him, Pat. Two movies were made over the last number of years. But unfortunately, both painted him as a type of a Robin Hood kind of a character. You know, that wasn't dangerous and a little bit foolish and, you know, something to be laughed at in terms of how the police were fooled by him. But overall, they never got the true picture or portrayed the true picture of what kind of a criminal Martin Cahill was. But this series lifts the veil on that, and I think people are going to get a pretty clear picture of what Martin Cahill stood for and how dangerous he really was.
Now, when did you first come across him?
I went to Dublin just the beginning of 1983. I had 11 months in the Guards at the time, and after leaving Templemore, I went to Ennis, and I looked for a transfer to Dublin, went to Donnybrook, which actually skirted the district where Martin Cahill lived. And I was very quickly, in the first couple of weeks, introduced to Martin, not physically, but brought up, showed where he lived. Followed him a few times in his car to see if we could get a look at him. He didn't do interviews. He didn't talk to you when you stopped him at a checkpoint. But I became aware of him very, very quickly after arriving because he was the number one target in Ireland at the time in terms of criminality.
Now, talk to me about his rise. I mean, I presume he started with some fairly petty offences and then his organisation developed into a much more serious operation. So How did he become the feared figure that he did become?
Well, Martin was born and reared in the tenements in around Rathmines. And so he came from very little. He had very little schooling. He wasn't an educated person, but he was a very clever person. And he started with low-level crimes. But he was noted for his commitment to strategy and planning his crimes. So he very rarely got caught. And he surrounded himself with people who took direction from him. And very quickly, he became, I suppose, noticed because of the serious crimes that he pulled off with, I suppose, great planning. And escaped the police on each and every occasion. So, I mean, look, some of his most notorious crimes, I suppose the most notorious is when he tried to assassinate the forensic scientist, Dr. Donovan. And I suppose that's the one that stands out for most. It's saying, like, you know, he raised crime and criminality in Ireland to a whole new level. He had, of course, he conducted the robbery, the jewellery robbery at O'Connor's Jewellers. And what people don't remember about that is more than 100 people lost their jobs as a consequence because he put them out of business.
Yeah, I lived around the corner from that O'Connor's factory. And on the morning I was going out to work and there was a young lad on a motorbike almost outside my house. And it was only later I realised that this guy was one of the lookouts for the Martin Cahill gang who were about to do over O'Connor's, the jewellery manufacturer. So that's a little postscript to all of that.
Absolutely, Pat. And that was what he did. He put so much planning into his crimes, including spotters running over and over and over again in the area, looking at it, checking people's movements, timings. He knew exactly what people were going to do that morning in O'Connor's Jewellers. He had been there so many times. He had people clocking the timings of who was going in, who was unlocking, who arrived at what time. So the planning was meticulous with him, and it paid dividends for him. I mean, they were in O'Connor's Jewellers for hours. Now, again, they were very, very aggressive in there. They really frightened people. They threatened to kill people. They held guns to people. people's heads. So, like, they weren't nice people. These were really, really aggressive, dangerous criminals. And that includes his whole gang, but particularly he himself.
Now, his public life, I suppose, was quite colourful. He used to wear Mickey Mouse garb and tried to make it look like he was making a fool of the authorities, running rings around them. His private life was also quite colourful as well. He allegedly had a polygamous relationship with his wife and her sister.
Well, that's all true, Pat, and I can attest to that because I had followed him for long enough over the years to know where he stayed for one part of the day and where he stayed for the second part of the day. So all of that is true. The Mickey Mouse underpants, etc., that only came about after he was being revealed to the public by the guards. And that happened after Rusborough House, when the T-Squad, the Tango Squad, were set up. And that was, I suppose, really a government or a Garda Síochána response to his notoriety. After Rusborough House, the art robbery took place. Martin Cahill became known internationally, actually globally, because this was a huge international crime as people saw it. And this, it embarrassed the state. And as people began to look into Martin Cahill and his crimes, they embarrassed Garda Síochána as a police service, a national police service. And because he became so notorious internationally, it was decided he had to be shut down. It had to stop. And the Tango Squad were set up. Over 90 young detectives brought into Harcourt Square as a result of a phone call maybe a day or 2 days before. I can remember getting it myself, Pat. And been told, present the body in Harcourt Square, you know, morning after tomorrow, they're setting up a new unit. Nobody knew what was happening or what it was about. But when we were in there, we were addressed by the chief superintendent, who later had to move into a local Garda station for his own protection, himself and his family. But he told us that morning, anybody who didn't want to be there should go home now because it was going to be dangerous and people were going to get hurt.
Yeah, and they wanted officers who were single rather than married with families because they figured they were putting you and your colleagues in harm's way.
Absolutely, and that was outlined to us very clearly. And they said, look, anybody who's married here, you need to reconsider your position here and we would advise you now to think clearly about what you're doing because this is not going to be easy and we're in it for the long haul. Now, and we were in it for the long haul, Pat.
And I remember some, you know, when he'd go to court and he'd be literally followed. You gave him no peace. That was part of the strategy, that wherever he went, he was tagged by a Garda.
Absolutely, Pat. It was a long-term strategy. We were in it for the long haul, as I say. And others that commented on it at the time didn't realise this. The objective was to squeeze the life out of them, to cut off their capacity to plan and strategize about their crimes and to keep that up for long enough that they would run out of cash and that they'd have to engage in crime and criminality without sufficient planning. And as a consequence, they would be caught. And that's exactly what happened for the majority of them. Martin ended up getting a sentence in the middle of this, a very short sentence for 4 months. And while he was in, it just transpired that without leadership and without planning, the rest of the gang embarked in crimes, pretty serious crimes, but almost all of them were caught and they ended up getting substantial sentences. So when Martin arrived back out of Spike Island, he found he had no gang left. So he started dabbling in crime himself, low-level crime and that, but it never got back to the heights that he was at.
He came to a sorry end from his point of view. He was gunned down in the public street.
That's right. I mean, Martin, I think the Bide robbery, the Rusborough House robbery of the Bide paintings was his downfall. It wasn't his normal affair in terms of criminality. He was out of his depth. He couldn't offload them. He couldn't turn the paintings into cash. And he went about making contact with people that he probably shouldn't have. He offered them to the IRA and they rejected it and said, no, it wasn't for them. They probably realised that there was too much exposure associated with the paintings. But then he went to the loyalists and that probably was what sealed his fate. He crossed the line, as others would have seen it, And the IRA eventually took responsibility or claimed responsibility for his death. But it was unceremonious, side of the road. Anybody who spent a day or 2 days watching him would have known how he lived his life. They would have been able to fill in the timings, same as he had done for many years for crimes, because it was the same pattern every day with him. And the timings were almost spot on. So it would have been very easy to attack him and take him out.
Some of the texts coming in. Cathal Skill was avoiding jail by witness intimidation. Nobody would give evidence against him for literally fear of their lives.
And that's absolutely correct, Pat. And I suppose it, in a way, it's nice to hear that people understood. People know what this person was. He intimidated the ordinary person in the street. He intimidated courtrooms. He was, I mean, look, we know what he had done. He nailed the person to the pool table at one particular point. They engaged in all sorts of outrageous violence against people, and they did intimidate people. They intimidated juries. They intimidated full courtrooms. So they were a really, really bad, aggressive bunch.
Someone says, Martin Cowell got his name, The General, from his love of buying videos of war movies. Nothing to do with his skill as a crime lord. Is that so?
No, that's not so. I mean, really, it was the press that gave him the handle, The General. And it was because he had a gang. He was meticulous in how he planned for his crimes. And he evaded justice for a considerable length of time.
I remember one afternoon, says Louise, going to the movie about Martin Cowell, and there were two young lads sitting behind me giving a running commentary to each other, usually saying, ah, no, it didn't happen like that at all. Oh, no, that's wrong. The director got it wrong. So he was something of a legend in his own time, wasn't he?
Yes, he certainly was. He was well known around Dublin, but well known because of the stories that were told about him. He wasn't well known by sight. Very few people actually knew him. He was quite secretive himself. He didn't drink, he didn't smoke, so he wasn't somebody that you'd find in the pub. He lived a very meagre lifestyle. And apart from the house that he bought in Rathmines, the second house, which was in a lovely estate, it cost a fortune to buy the house with somebody who had no income.
Yeah.
That was the only thing that he did.
Cowper Downs, I think it was.
That's correct.
A night when all the tyres on that street were, literally, they took a Stanley knife to them and everyone came out to punctures in their cars, which was put down to the general. Also, it was said that he set the forensic laboratory in UCD on fire. Was that him?
Yes, that was him as well. And the reason that he actually slashed all the tires of the people in the estate that he was living in, Pat, was because they began to help the guards. They gave guards food and, you know, tea and coffee during the, you know, albeit that they were putting themselves at risk. They allowed us to use their gardens, to use their driveways, which was very brave of them. But Martin sent them a signal then and went out, and literally he paid people to do it, young teenagers and that, to go and slash all the tires. And every tire in the place was slashed. All four tires in every car were done.
So Pat, finally,
the individual he was.
Finally, do you have any regrets that you didn't get him and jail him before the IRA got him?
Not at all, Pat. I mean, look, in policing, you can't take it personally. There's always going to be another Martin Cowell. There's always going to be a next drugs trafficking gang. You can't personalise it to individuals. You just do the job as it comes, and people can put handles on them or create persona for them. The guards just have to be objective and do their job. So, no, I wouldn't be in the slightest bit put off by it or disappointed by it. The strategy worked. And the strategy was to shut them down and cut off their capacity to engage in serious crime.
Well, Pat, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Pat Leahy, former Garda Assistant Commissioner for Dublin. And the series is called The Case I Can't Forget. It returns tomorrow night, 9:35, on RT1 and on the RT Player.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Every year, thousands of people go to their very first concert. Our boosted signal at large events means they can always call a taxi to get home.
Mom! Yeah. It was grand. Do you think you could pick me up?
Every connection counts, which is why Ireland can count on our network. Vodafone. Together we can.
Subject to coverage availability. Limitations and terms apply. See vodafone.ie/terms.